National Council of Women, Oral History 2. It's June 18, 1997, and Selma Weiss and Howard Braun are interviewing Robert Frommerman. Would you please tell us your name?
My name is Robert Frommerman.
We stopped last week at the point of the end of your freshman year at college.
So what college started over?
You can continue with that.
I started in the summer of 1942 to the University of Pittsburgh Engineering School. And I had been denied the interview scholarship at my high school because there weren't enough sign-ups for the registrar, a man named J.G. Quick, to interview and select from. So at the end of the first semester, I took my grades up to J.G. Quick and presented them. They were all A's, and I said, okay, now can I have the scholarship? And he agreed.
Was it a Pitt scholarship?
It was a Pitt scholarship, yes. It wasn't that much of a scholarship, but everything helped in those days. After all, the country was still just really coming out of the Depression. At any rate, so I started, went through the heat of that summer, which was not particularly pleasant. I lived at home in Rochester, Pennsylvania, and commuted by train to school. And I would get up, gulp breakfast, race for a 7:42 train, a 7:32 train, which was about a little more than a mile away, and hop on the train, do some studying on the way in, get off at Federal Street North Side, take a streetcar across to the corner of to the start of Fifth Avenue at Liberty Avenue, the site of the former Rosenbaum store. Then I'd catch another streetcar and get into Pittsburgh, get into the university for a first hour class, which began at 20 to 9. And if I was lucky, I got in only 5 minutes late. The class days were long because we had long laboratories, and I would finish at 5:30, sometimes later than that, and do the reverse for a streetcar, except that I didn't have to go to the north side to catch the train. I could catch it at downtown station and ride home. That was only the beginning of the day. When I got home, I had a fast dinner, listened to Fred Waring for 15 minutes, sometimes took a 15-minute nap, and was then up oftentimes at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning doing homework, and then repeat the next day. It wasn't exactly an easy or fun-filled school life. I went through 2 years, summer, winter, fall, and spring, that way, because I was anxious to get as much schooling under my belt as possible before going through the armed services. The war, of course, was going on, and I was anxious to enter with my education level to qualify me for doing something that was more interesting and useful than the lowest level in the Army. However, strangely enough, it didn't quite work out that way, because just short of graduation, I was grabbed for the Army, and I remember being inducted to Pittsburgh and going by train to Indiantown Gap, which was a reception center, and it was the middle of, it was the start of August. And it was terribly hot, and of course there was no air conditioning on trains. So all the windows were open. And when we got finally to the reception center and we were greeted by a sergeant, he said, "All right, you coal miners." And we looked around, and sure enough, we looked like coal miners because our faces were black and our clothes were black, all souvenirs of the train ride. At any rate, I put in a little bit more than 2 years in the Army, and they sent me from one training thing to another, from basic camp to the University of Maine, where they stuck me in electrical engineering, although I said that that was probably the biggest waste of time that they could assign me to before the assignment. That must have affected it, because that's where they put me. And while I was...
University of Maine, what time was that?
University of Maine is about 2 miles outside of Orono, O-R-O-N-O, Orono, Maine. And Orono is 6 miles from Bangor. And I was at Maine for 9 months and just fell in love with it. I loved the place and the people. And Orono was an interesting little town. The first time I had leave, I took the bus and went into Orono. And I didn't know where to get off, so I got off at what looked like a handy corner. And I stood on the corner and I asked the first passerby, where was the heart of town? And he gave me a dirty look and he said, you're standing on it. But,
you were uniform.
Yes. Anyway, that was a very pleasant experience. But we landed, I transferred from Camp Wheeler, Georgia, which was an infantry training camp.
From Orono?
No, I transferred from there to the University of Maine.
Okay.
And I had just gotten up there, and there were GIs from other basic training camps, and we all met there, congregated. And we were there about a week waiting for quarters, because for whatever reason they weren't prepared to receive us. So we were in some kind of temporary dormitory. And news of the breakthrough at the Bulge came in over the radio. And so we didn't bother to unpack, because we figured that we were the next shipment over. And we waited and waited. Nothing happened. So much
like... What were you doing in the meantime while you were waiting to be shipped?
Well, we were waiting for a school term to begin.
So
we were supposed to be at school there.
So you were doing nothing until the term started?
Well, in the Army, you never do nothing. I mean, you they find jobs for you. But yes, in real terms, we were doing nothing. But we fully expected that we were going to be pulled out, as the last college group had been pulled out the first time there was an emergency. And at any rate, as I say, it didn't happen, so I wound up spending 9 months on this beautiful campus. Had some interesting experiences. The first and only time I have ever been in 40 below zero weather. And I was stupid enough to go out in that and catch a bus and go into Bangor and go into Downfield, and almost lost my nose and my fingers in the act. At any rate, so eventually, I was, by the way, while I was at the University of Maine, the war ended. And I was very anxious at that point to get out, finish my schooling, and get started on my life. But I didn't have enough points for discharge, so I was shipped around a bit. I was shipped down to Camp Wood, which is outside of Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, and then I was shipped down to Camp Wheeler, doing various and sundry things, and finally shipped back up north to Fort Monmouth and discharged from there, or rather sent to discharge from there.
How did you feel about possibly going overseas to a war area? Were you nervous about that? Did they give you pep talks?
Well, you have to understand that an infantry basic camp was designed to turn everybody into killers. So, I don't know what you mean by a pep talk.
This
is somewhat more stringent than pep talks. I mean, this is how you kill. This is how you handle a bayonet. This is where you aim for. This is what you do with your...
Well, you know, my husband said that a lot of the men were anxious. The way they talked, they were actually anxious to go in and, you know, kill the enemy. I wondered about, you know, how if everybody felt that way. He said a lot of them were just wanted to go in and kill.
Most people I know like that were interested in action. What we call, just say the word was action. Kind of interested in action. You recall that term?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, most of it was bluff. I do remember. In my platoon, there were a lot of so-called action-oriented people. And I remember we went through an infiltration course, which meant that you were crawling under live machine gun fire. And you did this in a kind of sandy, muddy area where you were sweating, and the temperature was about 100 degrees, and the sand was inside your shirt and inside your trousers. Couldn't lift your head because there were the machine gun bullets. And at night, we went through it again. It was easier at night because they used tracer bullets, so you could stand up and run in between the swings of the machine gun. But at any rate, I was looking at the faces of some of our so-called action people while this was going on. And let me tell you, if their pants weren't damp, I would be very surprised. So much for action. As far as I was concerned, I just felt it was a dirty job that had to be done. And I was ready to go when I had to go. When was my time to go? It's strange the way things work out, because the Army grabbed me and sent me off to Maine. I certainly didn't volunteer for it. And the people who trained with me in my platoon went in and were thrown in as replacements. And this was, as I said, at the time of the Battle of the Bulge. And they came back pretty well shot up. There was one fellow in our platoon from my hometown, and he came back with a plate in his skull and various other serious souvenirs of the war. But at any rate, so that experience ended, and I went back to being a civilian.
When was the discharge?
I was discharged in 1946. And it was just before time to go back to school, so I took a brief vacation, and then school started. And because during my 2 years of school, due to the war, we were on 12-week quarters rather than regular 16-week semesters, as a result of which my credits were kind of garbled. So although I was within weeks and a couple of credits of graduation when I left school, when I came back, I had to complete 2 semesters to finish it, so I completed 9 months. And at that time, I was really anxious to live in Pittsburgh and cut out the commuting. And my cousin, who was 4 years older, had just been discharged as well. And he and I were looking for a place together, and we just couldn't find a place that was shorter commuting distance than coming from Rochester. In time, that is.
Pitt started what move?
Pardon me?
Where did Pitt start?
Pitt started... I guess I didn't get out in time for a summer term. It started in the fall. It started in September. And helpful either. Pitt's attitude was, we're a commuter school and we're going to stay a commuter school and you're on your own. And in the meantime, the enrollment has swelled enormously with this influx of soldiers. And so good instructors were really rather rare. And I remember our English instructor, we had a senior English instructor to make sure that engineers could all talk English. And he had a very severe accent, very difficult to understand. So that was some of the quality we had. But in spite of that, I got quite a good education there because I felt while I was in school that I was going to have to make a living at it, and so I was doggone well going to get it and get it good, which I did. I also found, to my surprise, in my high school that prepared me pretty well for school because I was in school with a lot of people who were valedictorians in their small high school were just having all kinds of difficulty. And it was much easier than that for me.
What about honors or awards?
Oh, actually, before I went to the Army, I was tapped for Sigma Tau, which is an engineering honorary.
Sigma what?
Sigma Tau.
T-A-U.
Also, I was I had a freshman honorary as well, Phi Eta Sigma.
Were there any particular professors that influenced you while you were at Pitt?
I can remember some of them very vividly. I remember our freshman English professor, whom I thoroughly enjoyed. I believe his name was Wiles. And our principal task in freshman English was writing themes, and I just took to that like a duck to water. I got very good grades in it and learned a lot under his tutelage. We also had an excellent chemistry teacher, a Dr. Tesch, I think it was T-E-S-C-H. And he had an interesting manner, which today we would recognize as being very gay. But he was a real sweetheart of a teacher and a very good one. And I just sat in that class and absorbed it through my pores. In freshman year, well, actually later than that, for a while I did room in school in an apartment which I shared with two other people. And sometimes we ran out of spending money, so we had a running crap game in our room. And we were pretty lucky at that, if that was luck. And two of these, the other two, were having a great deal of trouble getting through chemistry and getting through math, and I was breezing through on both of them. So I tutored both of them to the extent that they passed with adequate grades. I don't know how I got off on that. What did you ask me?
About your teachers, your professors. And we got off on the card game.
The experience in Phi Eta Sigma was kind of interesting. We had an electrical engineering professor, Professor Rush, R-U-S-H. And he was a very good teacher and a very nice gentleman and a very good advisor. But part of the constitution of Sigma Tau said that it was eligible for white males. So before I joined the society, I thought about it a good bit because I was very much tempted to turn it down. And as I thought about it, I decided that if I turned it down, I couldn't do anything about it. But if I joined it, I could. So when I joined, I became active in scrubbing the white male part of it. And a number of other people jumped on that bandwagon. Unfortunately, Professor Rush opposed it strenuously because he felt very strongly in that direction. And so we lost him as an advisor. He actually quit, and we actually changed the Constitution. And before leaving for the Army, by that time we were down to just a handful of members still in school.
Were there any black engineering students in the school at that time?
You know, I don't remember. I wasn't terribly color conscious. You know, in high school, there was a very lovely black family, three generations, and I was at least superficially friendly with them. And one of them, the youngest one, found me a summer job across the street from his house in a little grocery store. Also, while I was in high school, one of the members of our debate team, including our championship debate team, was a black fellow, Harry Fugit. And he and I became rather close friends, and we kept in contact for a long time. Harry, unfortunately, didn't have the wherewithal to go to school, so he joined the Army. And he stayed in the Army for 20 years till he could retire with an adequate pension, at which point he went back to school. And whenever Harry was on furlough from the Army, he looked me up and we had a visit.
What was the name of Harry Rush?
Fugit, F-U-G-E-T. He came back to Pittsburgh and he went to school and became, I think, a vice president of one of the Mellon Bank branches. And he married. And he and his wife visited me and my wife. And unfortunately, his wife was not of the same class or caliber that Harry was, and she was terribly uncomfortable. And it became a very uncomfortable visit. And we never got together again after that. The Army, of course, was very color conscious, especially down south in Georgia. In the Army, the blacks were in platoons by themselves. They marched singing great songs, because after all, blacks had rhythm, didn't they? And unfortunately, they had a dismal record on the firing range. But, you know, there were signs all over the place. The blacks went to the back of the bus, and there were black drinking fountains. And segregation was there.
I was surprised that you said that this black young man became, did you say president of the bank or something?
No, he was vice president.
I'm surprised that at that time a black could even become vice president.
Well, that was quite a bit later, I understand. I mean.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
By that time, the mood of the country had changed.
But so that was already after he got out of the Army.
Remember, he spent 20 years in the Army.
Right.
And he came back.
He got into the
60s
already.
And then he went back and worked for the bank.
Yeah.
And was gradually promoted, so it was quite a bit later. Interestingly enough, when I was sent to the University of Maine, and there were some black soldiers that came up there with us, and I used to run into them in the USO in Bangor. And the black soldiers danced with the white girls, and there was no problem at all as far as the Northerners were concerned. Now, the Southern soldiers collected in little groups and muttered and made funny noises, but that's all there was to it. In Maine, they had hardly ever seen a black. as far as I knew, there wasn't a black inhabitant in the whole state of Maine. So they were, what shall I say, they were interesting specimens as far as the mainlanders were concerned.
What about Jews? Were there a lot of Jews up around?
There was a small Jewish community in Maine. And I think I tried once or twice going to whatever community gathering was available there. And I don't remember the details of it very much, very well. But I was totally unimpressed with the people there. That was kind of the story of my Jewish experiences. I was always running into people who with whom I felt I had very little in common and very little interest in. And they reminded me of some of the old world manners of my grandmother, and that just didn't sit well with me. So they were not my thing.
Where were we?
Well, you asked me about the Jewish group.
Okay, and, you said you had little.
I had problems. I had the same experience in Missouri when I was in Camp Crowder. I had that experience in Maine. I just hadn't found the type or the people with compatible interests that that meant anything to me. And so my Jewish social experience was nil.
Did you come across a lot of anti-Semitism while you were in the Army?
You know, if I came across a lot of it, I sure don't remember it. It didn't impress me very much. I can't really think of a single event. That impressed me as far as anti-Semitism was concerned. I guess there must have been some, but I just I wasn't privy to the pleasure of that exposure.
Well, if it were bad, you would have had it, I'm sure.
I think so. Of course, the other thing was there weren't all the Lebanese Jews in the groups I was in. They're just one. I don't know why. Matter of fact, the infantry group that I trained with was a very interesting group. It was an experience I wouldn't care to repeat, but I wouldn't have missed it either. We had one fellow who was a professional boxer, and we had a little short Filipino who was a sailor. Someone picked on this little guy once upon a time, and so there was this arranged fight after duty hours in the courtyard of the platoon. And he compensated for his size by picking up a good-sized rock, which he held in his fist, and he just beat the daylights out of a guy who was twice his size and weight. We had another Filipino who was a very well-educated and charming gentleman. And he was studying very hard, very seriously, all the skills of killing. And I watched his transformation with a great deal of interest. We had people from the potato farms in Maine. We had a lot of people who had gone through literacy school in the Army because they came in not knowing how to read and write. sure that they really learned there, but they went through literacy school. We had one fellow who was an epileptic, but nobody believed him until he fell off and cracked his skull. At any rate, it was an interesting group. We had one fellow who cried all night because he was away from his wife, and his wife came to visit him, and she ran off with another fellow while she was in camp, and then he cried all night again. It was quite an exposure. Where would you like me to take off?
Okay. Did we talk? What did we mention? What year you graduated and what your degree was? I don't think so.
Okay.
So let's graduate.
Back to school.
Let's graduate.
Let's get out of this place. I graduated in 1947 in the spring. When I went back to school, by the way, for my 9 months, I was in school